Okay, so I would like to talk about some recent and not so recent results about image turbulence. So I would like to concentrate. So image turbulence is more complicated and different from hydro turbulence. It's natural to ask questions whether MG turbulence can exhibit some universal behavior. So, and I would like to demonstrate that there are indeed regimes of universality, universal regimes of MG turbulence. So, and I will show you some numerical simulations and some analytical modeling. So this work was done in collaboration with Jean Carlos Perez, Fausto Catania, and John Mason. It covers about 5 or 6 years of our joint work. So, and I would like to give you just very brief introduction. So, what's turbulence? Well, there is no exact definition. So, but when you see it, you know that you're dealing with turbulence. So, basically, it's a nonlinear motion of fluid where many interacting degrees of freedom are involved. So, in astrophysical systems, plasma is typically turbulent because Reynolds numbers are large, dimensions are large, and it's typically magnetized. So it's really hard to find any magnetic turbulence on Earth, but everywhere else it's abundant. So and there are different objects which people study and where people consider magnetized turbulence: solar wind, solar corona, magnetic reconnection, dynamo action, magnetic and density structures in the interstellar medium, which is relevant for scintillation of radio sources, star formation, cosmic ray acceleration, scattering, heat conduction, galaxy clusters, transport and fusion devices, and you can continue this list. So many applications in astrophysics and in laboratory. So now, what are the signatures of turbulence? Well, when we talk about signatures, we would like to talk about some universal properties of turbulence, and those are statistical properties of turbulence. So, for example, you can ask you can look at certain scaling relations, say spectra, structure functions, or, for example, you can look at structures, but then there is a caveat, so you have to define those structures. So, for example, you can ask where most of the dissipation occurs, so what are most intense, most singular structures. Then you'll probably get some universal answer, and universal in the sense that you can have different systems, say water, air, different physical systems, but if you look at the dissipation structures, you will see same morphology, meaning that probably underlying dynamics is similar. So now I would like to show some few plots from different systems. So this is Madison symmetric torus, is a plasma device where there is a strong guide field and magnetic fluctuations detected in this device. So this is versus toroidal mode. Basically, it's just you can interpret it as wave number. So, and they saw that they believe that turbulence, so there are some modes with small n which are unstable, there is steering instability here, so and somehow energy gets redistributed over a broader range of scales. So, and they believe that turbulence plays a role in redistributing energy here and even to these regimes.
What's the standard regime?
It's some regimes of operation of MST. So there is some steering mode, reduced steering regime, and standard regime.
What so, is MST?
Madison symmetric torus. It's a toroidal device with reverse field pinch. It's not a fusion device, but kind of they study some important properties of plasma.
It's toroidal.
Toroidal, yes.
Almost.
So those are solar wind observations. So different lines here. So green line is electric fluctuations and black line is magnetic fluctuations. So why electric fluctuations are important? Well, because at large scales they are probably related to velocity fluctuations, because at large scales plasma can be considered as ideal, so resistivity can be neglected, and then E is equal to V cross B. So V fluctuations are related to electric field fluctuations. At small scales, they deviate because at small scales, two fluid effects are probably important, and electric field actually traces density fluctuations. So and they deviate, and indeed there is modeling and numerical simulations which show that indeed this is a behavior which you would expect from theory. So now again, solar wind observations. So those are magnetic fluctuations in the solar wind. So they cover about three orders of magnitude. And power law is quite close to the -5/3. So here is a spectrum of electron density fluctuations in the interstellar medium, so at least here at those scales, so measured with different techniques. So why electron density fluctuations are related to turbulence? Well, it's believed that density fluctuations may be passively advected, as for example, entropy mode. And indeed, they follow the spectrum which you would expect from spectrum of turbulence.
May I give?
Yes.
The slope for ISM is not 5 thirds, but 11 thirds.
So there are different definitions. So if you compensate with volume factor k to the power 2, then you get -5/3. If sometimes people don't compensate, you get 11/3. So it's just a matter of definition. So there are, of course, error bars here, but I just saying just basically turbulence is important because somehow you have to transfer this energy from large scales to small scales. And also, this plot probably indicates that magnetized turbulence is important because if you look at those small scale fluctuations, those are beyond mean free pass scales. So scales beyond mean free pass. So if you ask how density fluctuations can survive at scales which are much, much smaller than mean free pass, so you can say that if plasma is magnetized, then density fluctuations can extend up to ion gyro radius rather than mean free pass because in the direction normal to the large scale magnetic field, to the guide field, the smallest scale is ion gyro radius.
Okay, the electron density is related to ion density because of quasi neutrality or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So they follow. It would follow the same power law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Even to the ion gyro radius.
Up. So. Electron gyro radius is much smaller than ion gyro radius. So after ion gyro radius, and ion gyro radius everything stops, so you cannot continue cascade at smaller scales. It's also a possibility which is discussed in the solar wind, but it's a separate story. That how cascade can continue through smaller scales at high frequency. Okay, now something about structure. So I think it's interesting. I'm not going to talk much about it, but just to say that it may be important. So there is a certain similarity between vorticity evolution and magnetic field evolution if we neglect dissipation effects. So if we neglect viscosity, vorticity evolves according to this equation, magnetic field evolves according to this equation. Of course, equations are the same, but initial conditions are different. So vorticity is wired to the velocity field, while magnetic field can have arbitrary initial conditions. So, but nevertheless, if you look at the structures which are formed by vorticity and by magnetic field, so those are simulations by Nordlund, Brandenburg, and other people from 1992. This is kind of convectively driven turbulence, as far as I remember, right? And so in those lines of strong magnetic field indeed have filamentary, indeed look like filaments. And I think those gray lines are vortex lines. So even more striking resemblance one can find if you look at non-thermal radiofilaments at the galactic center. Those are filaments which are seen in synchrotron radiation, so apparently they are strongly magnetized. So and people ask why those filaments exist. So a possible explanation was that maybe galactic center is strongly magnetized, but we just inject fast electrons at some points, and those electrons light up those lines of magnetic field. But there may be alternative explanation saying that maybe magnetic field is weak on average, but due to turbulence, it organizes in filaments. And there are some filamentary structures of magnetic field where even background cosmic ray electrons will provide enough, will be, you know, it will be sufficient to consider just background cosmic ray electrons to absorb something like that. So electrons are present everywhere, but just certain regions are strongly magnetized, and then electrons gyrate around this magnetic field and radiate really strongly in this direction, in those places. So the power of synchrotron radiation scales as some power of magnetic field. So even increase of magnetic field by a factor of few will create significant increase of radiation. So now one can consider dissipation structures of in neutral fluid and magnetic fluid. So this is neutral fluid and dissipation structure. So there are better plots. I should have found a better plot. So those are just little filaments, dissipation structures in neutral turbulence. In MHC turbulence, those are ribbons or sheets, current sheets, which are stretched along the guide magnetic field. So there is a strong guide magnetic field in this direction. Yeah, incompressible. Mm-hmm. Right. So then of course, to describe magnetic turbulence, one can try to use same ideas that are developed for hydroturbulence. We can assume that there is some energy injection at large scales. Then, due to nonlinear interaction, this energy gets redistributed over a broad range of scales, and eventually it's removed from the system at the smallest viscous or resistive scales. So, but of course, you cannot derive as strong analytic results in energy turbulence as you can in fluid turbulence. For example, the Kolmogorov relation, which exists in fluid turbulence, does not exist in energy turbulence. So, but still, this is a good picture which you can try to use as a model for MHD turbulence.
In incompressible MHD turbulence, people derive some kind of
relation. So there are some Politani and Pouquet, they derived relations, which are not Kolmogorov relation, because Kolmogorov relation is derived for the structure function of the same second order structure function of the same field.
Of third order structure
function. Yeah. Politani-Pouquet relations is third order structure function, mixed structure function, different fields. So it's not exactly the same. It's like one Kármán Howard relation rather than.
And that's for the incessor variables, right?
Not for the incessor variables, not.
And if dissipation. First of all, that one should have a fourth third, I think, and then there should be the Vorticle part as well.
There should be what?
The vorticity part as well in the dissipation.
So this is just fluid. Fluid. This is
line.
Incompressible. It's not divergence of V. It's
graph.
Yeah, it's like tensorial. Yeah. There is no dot.
Dynamics is a special case of homogeneity. Of course, you would have to have some more general relations in MHD that translate to quantum in case of zero.
Yeah, from Kármán relation can be obtained in fluid dynamics, but then Kolmogorov relation is much more involved. Just right.
Yeah, that's what it is.
I mean,
z plus z minus. That's an
analog. Right. But I will discuss a little bit maybe. Okay. So now why MHD turbulence is different? Well, the first and the most important difference is that fluid turbulence doesn't have waves. There are no bulk waves in compressible hydrodynamics. But MHD turbulence, if we impose large-scale magnetic field, does have Alvinic waves. And therefore, there is another parameter which has dimension of time. If you would like to construct parameter of find out what's typical time of energy cascade, so the expression is not unique. So one can look in more detail at the interaction of those propagating waves. Now, why do we say that guide field is important? So what is the nature of the guide field? Well, so it depends on the system. So in some systems, guide field is just imposed by external sources, like, for example, fusion devices. But in some systems, a guide field can be imposed by large-scale motion of plasma. So, for example, if you have random motion of fluid, and fluid is conducting, so it will generate magnetic field, amplify magnetic field due to dynamo mechanism. Now, if we compare with hydroturbulence, there can be large-scale flow, but Navier-Stokes equation is Galilean invariant. So if you go to the reference frame moving with a large-scale flow is not important. It does not affect dynamics of small-scale fluctuations. So if you have large-scale magnetic field, even if you go in the reference frame moving with large-scale flow, you can remove large-scale velocity field, but you will not be able to remove large-scale magnetic field. So in some sense, large-scale magnetic field is always important at all smaller scales. So it mediates dynamics at all small scales. And of course, if we consider very small scale fluctuations, then the large-scale magnetic field will look almost uniform. So that's why people believe that it's a correct setting if you just impose large-scale magnetic field and run numerical simulations. Okay, now equations, MHD equations. So this is momentum equation with Lorentz force and induction equation. So for simplicity, we can assume that viscosity is equal to resistivity if we don't want to consider subranges where between resistive and viscous scale, but we're interested only in the inertial interval. Now we can separate the uniform magnetic field uniform magnetic field plus fluctuations. Now we can introduce the Sasser variables only for the fluctuating parts. And then the equations will look like that. They will have very nice and symmetric form. So there is this linear part, which corresponds to wave-like motion. And there is the nonlinear part, which corresponds to the interaction between Z plus and Z minus, nonlinear interaction. Now, so what's important about this equation is that there are actually two things which are important. So first of all, one can show that there are exact solutions for this nonlinear equation if we remove driving mechanisms and the dissipation. So namely, any wave packet where Z minus is identically zero, for example, if Z minus is identically zero, meaning that V is equal to B everywhere. So V and B can have quite complicated structure, but they just equal, follow each other everywhere in space. Then this wave packet will move along the guide magnetic field without distortion, without any dispersion, with Alvin speed. So if we consider the initial condition where Z plus is identically zero, then Z minus will move in the opposite direction without distortion. So those are exact exact solutions of those nonlinear equations. If we remove force and remove the dissipation, then if Z minus is identically zero, there is no nonlinear term, and Z plus propagates without distortion. Now, what's also interesting is that energy contained in Z plus and energy contained in Z minus, defined like that, are independent invariants of ideal emission. So each of those energies is independently conserved, which is equivalent to the conservation of the total energy, kinetic plus magnetic, and additional conservation integral, which is cross helicity. So V dot B averaged is conserved. Right? So what this means? It means that if you have two wave packets with some energy here and some energy there, and they interact and cross each other, if after the interaction they separate again, like that, then the energy which was contained in Z minus will not change. So this, after the interaction, Z minus will have exactly the same energy as before interaction. And Z plus will have exactly the same energy as before interaction. But those wave packets will be deformed. So if these wave packets had like only large scale structures inside, and after the interaction, they will develop a lot of small scale variations. And that's how energy cascades to smaller and smaller scales. Basically, they interact, then they deform each other, and energy gets redistributed to smaller and smaller scales. So then, since those two integrals of motion are independent, one can consider different possibilities. One can consider the balance case when E plus is equal to E minus. One can set up numerical simulations in such a way, just force E plus and E minus in the same fashion. Or one can consider the case when E plus is much larger than E minus. So the first case is called balanced. The other one is imbalanced. So in nature, the imbalanced case is most important because there is no strict constraint why E plus should be equal to E minus. So those are two independent integrals of motion.
You mentioned nature, it is talking in the context of solar wind.
Yeah, it's here. So one can say that cross helicity is never exactly zero because in solar wind, for example, more Alvin waves move out of the sun than toward the sun. So in the interstellar medium or in other applications, instabilities can be spatially localized and then waves can propagate from those, you know, places where waves are excited. Also, which is quite interesting, numerical simulations show that even when turbulence is balanced overall, even if we conduct numerical simulations and make sure that it's on average E plus is equal to E minus, then you can stop simulations and look at the simulation domain. You will see that this domain will be split spontaneously into the regions of positive and negative imbalance. So even overall balance turbulence consists of patches of positive and negative imbalance. That's what's in numerical simulations. So now, after this discussion, what universal regimes one can expect? Well, you can consider here two possibilities. It can be balanced or imbalanced, cross helical. And you can have strong turbulence, where linear term is not larger than the nonlinear one. Or you can consider weak turbulence, which consists of predominantly of waves, which propagate along the guide field and then interact only weakly with each other. So and we expect that those four regimes should be universal. So in these limits, when, for example, Z plus is much larger, or for example, Z plus is equal to Z minus, and K parallel is equal to K prob Z plus or minus, you will have some universal behavior. So I will try to consider those regimes one by one. Actually, I plan to cover today only strong turbulence, but if time permits, I can also maybe answer questions or show some plots for weak turbulence as well.
You said even in a balanced case, you have the locally
imbalanced regions.
What is the typical size of these regions?
So depending on the scale, so there is whole hierarchy of scales. So if you force with large scale forcing, then at larger scales you will see sizes of your forcing. Those regions will just correspond to the scales of your driving. Now, if you take some, say, region with positive imbalance and filter out large scales, you will see inside this region small scale regions which have positive and negative imbalances. So it's kind of there is a whole hierarchy of structures. Okay, now what are the challenges for numerical simulations? So typically for simulating turbulence, incompressible turbulence, one can use pseudo-spectral MHD codes. One can use reduced MHD simulations since there is a strong guide field. So fluctuations along the guide field, one can show that they're not important, can be neglected. So those codes are run on supercomputers. And so this numerical simulations is quite challenging because now we have wave-like phenomena. So typically you have to run these simulations for many eddy turnover times, about 100, from our estimates, about 100 turnover times are needed to get good statistics, otherwise your slopes fluctuate in time. So state-of-the-art simulations now can reach resolutions 2048 squared in the guide field perpendicular direction. So even those simulations require thousands of processors and tens of millions of CPU hours. But those are quite involved simulations.
In the parallel direction?
So in the parallel direction, the resolution can be somewhat reduced. I will also show those simulations. But even if you have 2048 squared in the guide field, so let's have this estimate. If you have 2048 cubed simulations, then for one eddy turnover time at a large scale, you will need about 1 million CPU hours. So that's how it goes. So if you need to run 100, it's quite expensive. It's a quite expensive simulation. So we have reduced resolution in the parallel direction, so we can do it with 20-25 million hours. Now, what is strong MHD turbulence? Well, strong MHD turbulence means that a linear term is of the same order as nonlinear one. So this condition was proposed by Goldreich and Schritt here in 1995. So they basically say that fluctuations are anisotropic along the guide field, so they are quite short in the direction normal to the guide field and quite long along the guide field, so they kind of stretched along the guide field. And if we introduce two scales, L and lambda, then if we equate those two terms, say this term is of order VLVN, from here we pick up only the parallel gradient, so VLVN divided by L, from here we pick up the perpendicular gradient, because Shi-LVN waves, which are most important, are waves with polarizations normal to the guide field. Then we get this critical balance, and L should be much larger than lambda, and one can figure out how they scale. But then, since linear term is on the same order as a nonlinear one, then the scaling arguments will give you exactly the Kolmogorov scaling, because nonlinear term is just doesn't give anything extra.
If there is a strong guide field, and then because, you know, we recognize that the strong guide field cannot be transformed away like a large velocity, then one naively would tend to expect that the guide field has to show up in the energy spectrum somewhere.
So it will. So this energy spectrum becomes non-isotropic. So it looks like, so it's kind of in K parallel K perp plane. It's concentrated closer to K perp direction. So all the fluctuations happen in the field perpendicular direction, and spectrum is.
What I thought was B naught should explicitly appear in the spectrum law.
It does. It does appear in spectrum law. So this is spectrum versus K perp. If I plot the spectrum law as a function of K perp and K parallel, then in the K parallel part you would see the guide field.
Also, the spectrum will depend on the Alphanic Mach number, I guess. If you look at the ratio of the URMS to the Alphanic velocity.
Right, that's also true, yeah. So, yeah, and one can say that if, for example, magnetic field is weak and you have basically only velocity fluctuations, you are close to the Kolmogorov phenomenology, right? Now, if you increase magnetic field, at some point you should switch to a different phenomenology. So numerically, we found that it's even before us, Müller and Biscom found that this transition occurs somewhere close to 3 or 5. So if B naught is 3 to 5 times larger than URMS, you switch to a different regime. And after that, nothing happens. You can increase it by no, have this number 10, but nothing will happen. Now, what is the meaning of this critical balance condition? Well, it's quite simple, I would say. So you can look at this nonlinear term and ask, suppose that there is some typical time of nonlinear interaction due to this term, right? So we can estimate it as lambda divided by delta v of lambda. Let's say that delta v and delta b are on the same order, right? Then those fluctuations get decorrelated at this scale at some time t lambda. Right? So we can ask, during this time, when those fluctuations are still correlated, how far this information about those fluctuations can propagate along the guide field? Right? So how far we can correlate those fluctuations both here and there? And this is easy to estimate, it's just VLVN multiplied by tau lambda, because nothing can propagate faster than VLVN along this magnetic field. And this is a critical balance condition. So from this, substituting this t lambda here, you'll get critical balance condition. Meaning that even now, if cascade proceeds to smaller and smaller scales, those two terms will always be of the same order. So you can never make this term larger than this one or smaller than this one. So they're always on the same order, even at all smaller scales, simply because whatever correlation time you have here, you cannot correlate those fluctuations at scales larger than VLVN multiplied by this time. This was actually derived by Goldbach and Swinhard. Explained. Okay, now, so I would like to demonstrate how this happens. So those are numerical simulations, results of numerical simulations. So originally we created elongated eddies along the guide field. The guide field is in this direction, in Z direction. So, but they have mutually orthogonal polarizations, just for better demonstration. So, and you can see now, so initially they have just one sign, one cosine, just one mode. Or two modes in each direction. But now when they interact, you will see that one interaction will be enough to deform them significantly. So now they start to interact. And during one interaction, now it will stop somewhere here, you will see that a lot of small scale structures is formed. A lot of structures, they become corrugated and deformed in the field perpendicular direction. So now let's look more quantitatively at this effect. So we have two wave packets here. Now guide field is in this direction. So they're going to propagate towards each other and interact. And initially, each of them has exactly the same energy spectrum. So energy spectrum involves only k equal 1 and k equal 2, two modes in the energy spectrum. Right? So when they interact, you'll see that the spectrum will become very, very broad. During one interaction, you will see all the scales will be generated. And then when they separate again, viscosity will kill this tail very fast. Then they interact again, long tail will be generated, and then when they separate, viscosity will kill it again. So they propagate, now they interact, and then viscosity slowly kills, and then they interact again, viscosity kills, and so on. So those are decaying simulations, not driven. Okay, now let's look at the results of numerical simulation. So, as I announced before, this critical balance picture suggests that the spectrum should be k perp to the minus 5/3. Now, so here are two numerical simulations. So this is early simulation with MHD and 512 cubed resolution. So the spectrum was quite short, but it was very consistent with what also was also observed by Müller and Biscom. So, but the spectrum turns out to be quite close to k-perp to the minus 3/2. So this spectrum compensated by 3/2, you see it's quite flat. So the red line is our quite recent simulation through inside grant. So we got about 25 million hours for this simulation. So this is very large resolution simulation in the field perpendicular direction, but with a reduced resolution in the field parallel direction, only 512 in the field parallel direction. So spectrum scaling is now spans always almost one order of magnitude. And it's very nice, it's very close to k-perp to the minus 3/2, not 5/3. So this is balanced MHD turbulence. Okay, so now let's consider imbalanced MHD turbulence. So now we have E plus and E minus, which have different amplitudes, and we gradually increase Reynolds number. So smallest Reynolds number, larger and larger, and the largest one. Largest one also corresponds to 2048 squared in the perpendicular direction. So we see that we drive fields with exactly the same force in the routine. So both modes are anchored at the largest scales, Okay, nothing changes here. And they converge at the dissipation scale. So when we move this dissipation scale to the right, to smaller and smaller scales, they still converge here, and so this picture, just this tail becomes longer and longer and longer and longer. So, and it's natural to claim that if we keep increasing Reynolds number, the only possibility is that those two fields should become parallel, those two lines should become parallel.
But the traditional way to plot a spectra of universal turbulence is to fit them at the dissipation scale. So the dissipation scale, as long as you have convergence and you have universality, the dissipation scale has to precisely match. And in this plot, you just show a plot versus k, and not k. Eta is
yeah, because I want to show precisely this effect at the dissipation scale, and I don't agree that traditional way to plot. I can plot it any way I want. Just for me, traditional way is plot it like that. So
there is a good reason why people do this, because you have to demonstrate numerical convergence. If you want to make strong claims on the slope, you have to demonstrate numerical convergence, and this can only be done by fitting spectra as a dissipation scale, and then looking at the Verzier inertial ranges.
I mean, here
this was done in Hydro many, many times.
Here it seems to show convergence of large scales instead.
Right, I'm just saying that increasing, those simulations are resolved in the two perpendicular directions, so everything's resolved. Okay, so we just move this to the right, and you see that spectrum becomes longer and longer and longer.
But they do not collapse at large scale. You see, eventually one of them collapses at one end, and then just going to Warsaw. But all collapses, this end, and then going to Warsaw. Yeah, but it's a logarithmic scale, which means that they do not collapse at large scale. They're not very different, but yeah, it's kind of because, you know, there is average, and so even so, those curves are average over about 100 turnover times, but even if you look at it, those, you will see that there are slow, it's really hard to do.
I mean, we cannot average over 1,000 times.
That's probably what Andrei suggests, that you actually shift from them just three scales so that sees if they collapse.
Yeah.
So I average only at six Arvinic times, but I plotted it the right way.
Okay, there has to be numerical convergence. Those simulations are resolved.
No,
I will discuss
this. This is not numerical convergence.
Point is made. Let's move.
Sorry,
a quick question. Is it snapshot or time average?
Those are averaged over many turnover times.
And what is the forcing?
So we force it at k perp equal 1 and k perp equal 2. With random Gaussian forcing, with short time scale forcing, because we want to control energy input to the system. So when you have short time correlated force, you control on average.
How small is it?
Correlation time about, I think it's about 20 times smaller than the turnover time of the scale. About 20, about 5.
Normally you would compensate with another epsilon in to the about half power, I think, in that case.
So epsilons are controlled. So we control epsilon. So if we have short time correlated force, then you control average of epsilon. So epsilon, which is average of energy supply, is controlled. So that's what.
Yeah, yeah, right. But you didn't normalize this in any such way. Yeah. So one cannot read off anything.
So this plot is not to make any other precise statements, rather than to show that if we have exactly the same forcing routine, those are kind of close to each other, they oscillate within some error, probably of averaging error. But they are anchored here, they don't diverge, they don't start to do some weird things. But they here we see significant difference, it just becomes longer and longer and longer.
So Stan, does it mean that since you see the same kind of spectrum for both balanced and unbalanced case, so does it mean cross helicity doesn't play any role in the determination of spectrum?
So cross helicity is important here. But what I would like to claim later then, cross helicity is important, but it's not important what the amount of cross helicity. What's important how it all changes with scale, how it scales. But I will show you later. Now, how to explain this? So we propose the following explanation. So we try to check this during the last 5 years. So if you look at the simulation domain in the field perpendicular direction, so those are fluctuations of V and B, some snapshot of fluctuations of V and B in the plane normal to the guide field. just some play, right? You would see that energy-containing regions look like that. So we have velocity and magnetic fluctuations which align their direction within quite small angle. So everything changes quite slowly as you go in this direction. And everything changes quite fast as you go in the normal direction. Right? So and all those fluctuations are quite weak. It's just kind of thermal bus of fluctuations and then those structures which contain most of the energy. Now, if you assume that indeed V and B are almost parallel or very close to each other, but they can be positively or negatively aligned, and we would like to estimate this nonlinear term, then we will see that this nonlinear term would be estimated like that, but we'll also pick up the small angle of alignment because Z plus and Z minus are mostly in this direction, but the gradients are mostly in this direction. So there is a depletion of nonlinear interaction in this picture.
But the anisotropy enters into the energy transfer, so we have also to demonstrate that this is a strong turbulence, and anisotropy corresponds to strong turbulence.
Okay, I just at this point I don't demonstrate anything. I'm just saying that if we use dimensional arguments to estimate the nonlinear term, then this how we would estimate it. The nonlinear term is going to be depleted, right? So if, for example, V and B are ideally aligned, then there will be no energy cascade. You'll have a Salvianic state which would just propagate along the guide field without any distortion. This is the only point which I make.
So basically you're saying that there is actually some alpha-ionization going
on? Yeah, this is what alpha-ionization. So and I will discuss it now. So now if this nonlinear interaction is depleted, let's assume that it's depleted like that, then eddy turnover time is increased by this angle, then energy flux should be constant, and then this is the scaling of the velocity field. Now we can ask, how we should scale this angle of alignment? It follows that angle of alignment should change with scale, if we would like to change the scaling of velocity field. How we should change this angle of alignment to make sure that energy spectrum is compared to the minus 3/2? Well, it tells us that the angle of alignment should be scaled like that. It's lambda to the power 1/4. So it should be, so alignment should be scale dependent. Now, what does it mean that as you look at smaller and smaller scales, velocity and magnetic fluctuations become more and more and more aligned, progressively stronger and stronger and stronger aligned. But they should never become exactly aligned, because if they are exactly aligned, there is no energy cascade. Because energy cascade just switches off. So if you want to maintain constant energy flux, then they should be always aligned, but not exactly. Right? But then the question is why they are aligned. Because in image turbulence there are two conserved quantities, energy and cross-helicity. So one can show, one can argue that energy dissipates faster than cross-helicity. And if we didn't have any driving, if we just create...
Faster in what sense? As you go to our smaller scales or
no. Suppose that we create some turbulence without any driving and let it decay, right? Energy will decay faster than cross-helicity. So the rate of energy decay will be larger than the rate of cross-helicity decay.
But for cross-helicity, it's not positively defined quantity. What do you mean
right.
by decay? It just
fluctuates. No, if you initially create.
Unnecessarily.
So it decays. Then one can show, it was done in the 80s. Then in this decay, the final state, there will be some self-organized state finally. So V and B should be either totally aligned or totally counter-aligned. So turbulence very fast on few eddy turnover times become either aligned to counter-aligned, reaches this counter-Alvenic state. And after that, there is no energy cascade. This state just sits there and slowly dissipates due to resistivity and viscosity. So everything gets aligned. Now, what's happening here? Turbulence tries at each scale to align V and B fluctuations, but it cannot align them precisely because otherwise energy cascade will be shut down. So it finds some optimal alignment such that they are maximally aligned, but still correspond to constant energy flux. So, and apparently that's how one can argue that the angle should be scale dependent. So
there are other ways to derive 3/2.
So strong turbulence.
You're saying that because the cascade should exist, there's some law for theta, but you can take any law for theta,
yes,
and then there will be still a cascade, and each
absolutely
of this law will correspond to a different
absolutely
scale.
So I'm just asking what scaling you should choose to reproduce this spectrum. After that, we're going to ask, okay, can you pinpoint some dynamical mechanism which would create exactly this alignment? So this is a separate question. So the effect is this. So this is the effect which we claim exists in image turbulence. So small scale.
Try to measure it numerically.
Yep, next slide. So that's this picture is taken from Mason et al. And I will explain what those curves mean. So if you consider this structure function, correlation function, delta V, so in the field perpendicular direction, what takes the perpendicular direction, delta V cross delta B, which picks up the sine of the angle between delta V, delta B, multiplied by delta V and delta B. And then second structure function is just delta V and delta B average. So we just take two points in the field perpendicular plane, calculate delta V in this point, delta B in this point, take cross product, right, and calculate those two structure functions. Now we would like to plot the ratio of the structure functions versus scale. That's what we find. So those different cases correspond to different driving routines. So when we did this in 2006, there were a lot of questions, but maybe just signature of your driving. Maybe if you drive with long-time correlated force, short-time correlated force, one mode, if you just freeze large-scale modes like Mueller and Biscom do, or you know, drive only velocity field, drive only magnetic field, what happens? So Joan Mason, she looked through the literature and classified all those drivings in like driving V, driving B, driving with large scale, large correlation time, small correlation time, and compiled all those cases and did those simulations to match all those driving. And they all produce exactly the same result.
So a priori, you do not know what is the alignment in the asymptotic case. So maybe it's just constant, and you drive without alignment, so it will adjust itself to the asymptotic case, and then it will be constant.
So I know just only what I show. I'm just saying that there is certain scaling correlation between those structure
functions.
Where
is the forcing scale?
So force and scale is somewhere here.
There's also a way to check this, is to run several simulations with different resolution.
I will show
check
it.
Check whether this extends.
I will show it.
Okay.
So basically we say that we're driving somewhere here, and we see this curve. So now I can ask you, okay, suppose that we forget everything that I explained before. Try to explain this. Try to explain why those correlation functions should have so nice, you know, relative scaling. So it seems that if you have just sine and average, just say modulus of sine and average, you will get something about 0.5, 0.6, which is this point. So at large scales, sine is random, the angle is random. So this corresponds to this point exactly. And then it becomes more and more organized in this way.
It's not much of a power law, to tell the truth, but it's really decreases.
Well, it's almost
really decreases.
Yeah, it's almost a decade, so it's quite good compared to
decreases from 0.6 to 0.3.
Yeah.
On the interval, which is less than a decade.
I will show you a little bit later why we think it's good, because if you look at each star, I will show a little bit.
It's relatively not high resolution.
Yeah, it's 5 to 12 cubes, right? Yeah. So. Let's move on. So those are just snapshots showing those regions of positive and negative alignment. So it's field perpendicular. So cosine can be the positive or negative. It's not perpendicular direction. So just an illustration. I'm not going to make any quantitative. I don't want to derive any quantitative results here. So now what I would like to do, I would like to filter out large scales. And you will see that inside those regions of, say, positive and negative alignment, as we filter out large scales, you will see regions of subregions of positive and negative alignment. So it's really a hierarchical structure. So it will be slow, but so it's just slow. It filters out slowly, but if you look, you will see then there are some regions of blue and red appear. If you turn back, you will see look at some blue region. You will see that it's inside, you can find some also red and blue regions, and so on. So it's a quite interesting phenomenon of self-organization in driven system. So far when people discuss self-organization, they basically assumed some decaying fluctuations and some structures appearing through selective decay. So here we have steadily driven turbulence and still the system tries to self-organize itself.
In the worst case, there's always self-organization in a driven system.
Yeah, but at large scales, you pretty much have more or less steady, you know, fluctuations here. At small scales, fluctuations evolve quite fast, and still they become more and more organized. Okay, it's still changing. Okay, next. Now, this is just geometric mean. I will skip it. It's really how those turbulence edges look like when they have when there is no disalignment and there is alignment. When there is no alignment, there are V and B vectors are have random directions in the full perpendicular plane. When they align, the eddy looks like ribbon. So when scale decreases, this structure will turn into filament, but this structure turns into current sheet, because those V and B fluctuations are mostly in this direction, so it will turn into current sheet, which is also consistent with observations of MHG turbulence, where dissipation structures are not filaments, but current sheets. Now, here, those are very recent results. Just I would like to show why we believe that this scaling is good. So if we look at those, so this is the way how we define this angle, right? Take ratio of two structure functions. If you look at each of those structure functions separately, you don't see any good scaling. Even if you go to larger resolution, to 1024, 2048, you just barely start seeing something like scaling interval, two structure functions. Now, plot the ratio and immediately see nice scaling. This is 256. This is very small resolution. This is 512.
Well, this is called inflection point effect. You have something which is like inflection point. It looks nicely straight for an interval.
Right.
So you don't have inflection in the left. So
right. It helps. I agree.
It looks less straight.
I agree. So
eventually you can't escape the fact that if there is not a power law there, then you don't have much of an inertial interval. So if you don't have much of an inertial interval, then so this is just inflection point effect.
Right. But let me maybe mention here. Hypothesis. But let me mention that we know. Similar effect, not identical, but similar effect is extended self-similarity in fluid turbulence, right? For some reason, structure functions which are spoiled significantly by the dissipation effects, somehow when you plot one structure function versus the other one, those dissipation effects cancel out each other, right? And you're going to go up to the smallest resolved point with very nice scaling. So we believe something like that happens here, but in a different fashion, because now we have ratio of two structure functions. So apparently each of them has some scaling multiplied by some function which depends on the dissipation. You plot the ratio, they cancel out each other. And now we would like to explore this a little bit and say why this may be true. So look, those two simulations are conducted with the same Reynolds number. Reynolds number is dissipation is exactly at the same point. Right? But we increase the resolution. So if they would bend on the dissipation scale, they would just follow each other. Doesn't matter what the resolution is. Right? Now we increase the resolution and this curve follows up to the smallest resolved scale. So there is a certain cutoff scale in numerical simulations due to the Eliasing effects, so beyond which you cannot continue. So this it just follows for the same Reynolds number. We increase resolution by a factor of two.
Sorry.
Yeah.
How large is the eta or dissipation scale in that thing? Eta.
So, okay.
What scale?
Where is point where it's
If you look at the energy scale, energy spectrum, and ask what scale, where energy spectrum starts to fall off, right, due to dissipation, it will be somewhere here. So the energy spectrum would be, so the energy in your shoulder would be, for this resolution, 512, it should be from k to the 4 to k to the maybe 15, just 3, by factor of 3, so it would be somewhere here. So it continues well deep in the dissipation region. Now, this is another simulation. Here, we have exactly same resolution, 512, but we change Reynolds number. You see, it's intense. It doesn't know anything about the Reynolds number. So we change Reynolds number by factor of 2, nothing changes. Pretty much nothing. Also, there are some averaging effects, and the fact that here we,
But in your theory, it has to change by a factor of two to the 1/4 power.
No, I'm just saying
because you have much shorter inertial range.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So for some reason, this ratio, which we call extended scaling law, so for some reason. Let me formulate it like that. So we believe that in MHG turbulence, there are certain objects which are quite stable with respect to Reynolds number.
Namely, to put it in physical words, they continue in the viscous interval.
They continue.
So they go through from an inertial interval through
right.
The viscous interval.
Yeah. They
more or less the same amount.
They continue.
That would be really strange because that would be a power law which you actually
So,
to cascade, and there is already no cascade in the viscous interval.
Well, in the viscous interval, nonlinear term is of the same order as a dissipation term. So, there may be still signatures of nonlinear interaction. But for some reason, those objects are quite stable. So, it's really nice to find such objects because that's how you can test. So, you can look at numerical simulations, you can look at observations, for example, and test those objects which you know are stable with respect to Reynolds number. So, we don't. really, so from here one can conclude that each structure function has maybe some power law spoiled with the same function in the dissipation region, and they cancel out somehow. So that's what.
Well, but you have 2,000 resolution. Where
right.
are they?
Right, in right. I will show. Let me show next slide, and I will explain what happens. Now. But it's the following result. Now we try, since this scaling law goes very deep in the dissipation region, so it's really important for the simulations to make sure the dissipation region is well resolved. Not only the inertial interval, but the dissipation region is well resolved. It's really important that you don't spoil any physics inside the dissipation region. Otherwise, this can pictures can degrade. In a way, they conducted a series of simulations and see what happens if we spoil the dissipation region. So here we spoil the dissipation region in the following fashion. We changed parallel resolution, because that's always what we usually do to save, you know, numerical cost. We change parallel resolution. So here we have parallel resolution, the largest parallel resolution. And scaling, we have good scaling, same scaling as before. If we increase parallel resolution even more, nothing changes. This is already saturated scaling. Now we try to decrease parallel resolution by factor of 2 and by factor of 4. And we see that immediately this picture gets spoiled. So it doesn't affect the energy spectrum, because energy spectrum probes something up to here. Right? But if you look at the scaling, it gets very easily spoiled. And if you keep decreasing parallel resolution, you can even spoil somehow. If your simulation is under-resolved deep in the dissipation range, you have something which you can call saturation, whatever we can call it here. And then you actually match those two regions, and you somehow spoil the whole curve. Yes?
5 minutes.
Ah. Okay, so we found that spectrum of line angle indeed degrades significantly when you reduce parallel resolution. We also postulate that it can also degrade, we check that it can degrade significantly if you, for example, push Reynolds number to the limit in the field perpendicular direction. Pushing it to the limit means that you don't leave enough space to resolve the dissipation scale. You immediately start to break this curve.
All dissipation is in perpendicular direction, at zero in parallel direction.
No, there is also dissipation in the parallel direction. There is also some dissipation in the parallel direction, because we also decrease your scales in the parallel direction.
But these are strongly anisotropic simulations.
Right, right. But anything
that
becomes...
Which means that your K perpendicular is much larger, so,
right.
So you're,
absolutely.
Your Laplacian will be determined by K perpendicular, not...
And by K parallel. It's small in the inertial interval, but as you go to the dissipation, deep in the dissipation region, and the scaling apparently grows deep in the dissipation region.
As far as I remember, your V0 was 10 or 5. If this is 10, if this is 5, then
right.
Your K perpendicular is roughly 25 times, the contribution to the delta is 25 times larger.
So I'm just saying that when we have numerical simulation with fully resolved parallel scale, and how, no fully, we increase parallel resolution until everything saturates. So at this curve, if we increase it by factor of 2, nothing will change, it's saturated. Now we decrease it. And when we decrease by factor of 2, it goes up, decrease by factor of 4, it goes up. So we believe since this ratio of two structure functions probes deep in the dissipation region, you should resolve dissipation region
well. Your claim that alignment goes deep into the dissipation region is only true for resolutions less than 512.
No, so this is...
As far as I saw from my simulations.
Well, I'm just saying that to see this effect, you don't really need to go to high resolution. It's very easily can be reproduced in small resolution if you spoil the dissipation.
No, there's a claim that it's universally go to very deep into the dissipation range.
Right.
And how does it depend on Reynolds number?
Because
yes,
you can,
it does, because it saturates and then it doesn't go into the dissipation.
Because if you spoil the physics in the dissipation range, it doesn't go deep in the dissipation range. Until if you resolve the dissipation range well enough, you can continue the scaling deep in the dissipation range. This
okay.
is our statement.
What's wrong with my 1500 cube simulation?
Let the speaker
Okay. So, and this is conclusion of strong turbulence. My last half is like a week, but I'm going. So basically, says in the balanced turbulence, both spectra have same amplitude and scaling, k curve to the minus 3/2, which is related to the alignment between V and B fluctuations. In imbalanced turbulence, the spectra E plus and E minus have different amplitudes, but same scaling, minus 3/2. And this is consistent with this, what's your question? That overall, which simulation domain is aligned on average, it consists of patches of imbalance. If it's balanced on average, it consists of patches of imbalance. Now, if you have many patches of various imbalances, and each of them has exactly the same scaling, but different amplitudes. Now, if we average over all those regions, we're basically averaging amplitudes, but scalings are the same. So in that, how this scaling is nicely reconciled with this one, because we have different sub-domains. All of them have exactly the same scaling, but different amplitudes. Now the average of all those subdomains, we average those amplitudes, but scaling is the same. And finally, we get same amplitudes and same scalings.
I didn't know that it is that easy to build a theory of imbalanced turbulence. It's just basically one line.
It's not serious. I'm just showing that it's somehow. So if we look at numerical simulation, say how come we have all those imbalanced regions, each of them have different scalings. How come?
Let's be the finish, and then you can make a commentary
remark. I'm done.
Okay. Now we can have time for questions and remarks. Yes, you can, please.
Did you measure the difference between plus and minus? It gives you helicity spectrum.
Well, helicity spectrum is just
for some scaling.
It just the difference. So the helicity spectrum becomes flat. So it's just same scaling as E plus and minus. Yeah. Yeah. And I've heard from people like last fall. I've heard from people in solar wind community that that's what they measure in solar wind as well.
So all the spectra are the same scale.
If you take the limit for low Reynolds number, and then also the hydrodynamic fields can sustain perturbative waves, traveling waves, what is changing in the coupling between the magnetic field?
MHD or magnetic? So I'm not sure if I answered the question correctly, but I will answer it, then you will be able to.
If you reduce the Reynolds number, the flow is no more turbulent, but it becomes unstable. And so can sustain either stable or unstable traveling waves.
Yeah, but then they're going to dissipate quite strongly, those waves, due to viscosity and resistivity, because if we reduce Reynolds number, then viscous effects, dissipation effects.
So not only the viscous effect, the unstable perturbation are growing.
I'm not sure what happened. Sorry, I don't understand the question.
Yeah, probably it's better to show.
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry.
Okay. I just want to make a short remark. I mean, for me, it looks really impressive with this alignment, but which is just, let's face it as it is, it's some statement about some correlation function, and some correlation function seems to have really strong scale dependence, almost like a power law. Okay, so it is. Now, from here to statement about cascade is a huge distance. Because the fact that there are some points, and there are many statistically significant, where they are aligned, does not mean that those are the points which carry cascade. It's different. Well, that's a different correlation function, which also involves both of this, which corresponds to energy flux. It may be plausible, but even if this is right, and I find it very interesting, this, because it's, for me, it's just extra interesting information about turbulence well away from a spectrum. People always fixated on the spectrum. But not necessarily mean that if you have this one or four, that three halves is right. Because it's a huge jump from one to another, saying that this alignment now is energetically significant.
Right. Basically, the argument made here. So first of all, even if they're not related, then it's a nice coincidence because the numbers fit well.
Maybe, but then again, I mean, make a 10,000 cube, and then you'll see that it's not one or four.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just judging by what
I'm saying. I would love this 1/4 if it would be derivable. I'm all arguable, I don't know, like you take a square root of n and your n is actually 1/λ square root of lambda, something like this. I would spend, another few days trying to cook some arguments for which 1/4 would come not from desire to have three halves in the spectrum, but from some kind of a real whatever.
Was
some Gaussian type one.
Right.
As long as they don't have it, I just. This is very impressive. I mean, this alignment exists. Whatever
scale, alignment exists. It's really Campbell decreases pretty. It's interesting information, not necessarily significant energetically. Maybe yes, maybe no.
Right. One can also say, compare with situation in Hydra, when people say that with wavelet transform, they say that one can show that you can actually leave just see. But this is in the say, simulation dimension, that all the energy cascade actually happens in some structures. So you can derive a lot of fluctuations, which probably significant, but if you calculate energy, you can just single out those intense structures and they will produce a Kolmogorov spectrum. So something like that, we hope we see here. So we look at simulation domains, there are strong regions where V and B are strong. And there are.
That's called calculating conditional averages.
Yeah.
Yeah. So go ahead, calculate conditional averages.
No, 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 I agree.
And then we...
Yeah.
So, yeah, but I can I call
yeah.
So, so basically, we were the first who published this curve. And this was puzzling for us. Of course, we were following Stasi's prediction. And we plotted this curve, we published it first. But it wasn't clear whether this is an asymptotic regime of turbulence. So eventually,
there are no asymptotic regime in numerics. You know,
we see that this curve basically saturates at around 0.3 when you go to higher and higher resolution.
Yeah, that would be another statement, like saying that this is just some intermediate transient, which, I mean, just a number, I mean, this would be so Gaussian random blah, 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 one half. Now I have whatever non-linearity, so it's 0.3. Which means that no matter how would you go down, you would never go beyond 0.3. But then again, show us the data. Which means that it would never be a power law interval.
You can give
power law between 0.6 and 0.6.
Right. Basically what I mean, if we start 56.512, which is this power law, we can go to 1,000, but we because of computing time, we decided to spend it on the simulations of energy interval, so somewhat reduced parallel resolution. If you do it with reduced parallel resolution in 2,000 square, you would see. Maybe I should stay this way. So if you look at those results.
Show your best.
So let me show this. This is 512. And this is parallel resolution reduced by a factor of 4. It goes up a little bit, right? This curve. Now if you have 2048 with parallel resolution decreased by a factor of 4, you will have somewhat similar curve. So it doesn't get flat here after that. So just same curve, it's in this case, this curve should go down, this curve goes slightly less, but it's same type of curve. But don't see, I would put it that way, we don't see any saturation in high resolution results, even if it's saturated at some different number.
What prevents you from doing 1,000 Q, and this is correct from this argument?
No.
You can do 1,000 Q and show that
absolutely.
It still goes down.
Yeah, absolutely. I would just say that it's really computationally expensive. So when you design computational simulations, We wanted to look at imbalance, see how the spectra become parallel or not in a balanced case. So we don't really, I mean, that's how it goes.
It's open, and it's a deal.
Have you looked into the scaling of the individual angles? So you have the cross product and then averaged divided by the average of the moduli. But if you actually calculate the angle first and then averaged.
Yeah, so it's not us, it's Andre and Alex did this. So if you just have an angle, an average, you won't get any line. It's going to be just flat about this level. And it's explainable because there are a lot of weak fluctuations which are not aligned. And if you average of the C of...
Because you can fill out again.
Yeah, but if you
can put a weighting factor proportional to the local field strength.
Yeah, but if you weight it with energy, which is V B squared, then you get what we get.
So in this sense, that makes sense because it's kind of quadratic in what you want. Okay, I mean, for us uninvolved, it's very interesting, and we wish you guys to resolve your controversies by spending a few more $100,000 of taxpayers' money. And we clearly could not get now the final answer. I really learned a lot from you, and I hope all of us about it. So thanks to everyone.